It's that time of week, the time you've been waiting for. It's time for Goat Gab, a weekly podcast about all things in the dairy goat industry. Sit back and enjoy an hour or so with your hosts, Laura Warren Hughes and Cameron Jedlowski, as we talk about ideas and topics that matter to the dairy goat world. Welcome back, listeners, to another exciting episode of Goat Gab. We're so glad you're with us. And as always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Laura Warren Hughes.
And I'm the other co-host, Cameron Jodlowski. And this week, we are joined by, I would say, a brother or sister in Alpines here today, Dr. Emma Camps. Dr. Emma, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk today.
We're so glad you're here.
Yes, we're super excited. Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a little about your background for the listeners that don't know who the superhero Dr. Emma Camps is.
You flatter me, but I'm Emma Camps. I have been breeding Alpines under the herd name E.K. Rose Farm since 2008. Most people in the goat circle are grandfathered in, so they don't have to call me Dr. Emma. They have earned the right to call me just Emma by knowing me when I was that dorky kid in braces. So I went to my undergrad in Ohio and then back to the University of Illinois for my DVM degree, ILL. And now I practice mostly small animal medicine in northern Illinois, but word got out that I had goats, and now more and more are showing up on my schedule on a daily basis. So I'm happy to share what I know and what I don't know, and we'll see if we can get everybody a little bit more prepared for the unexpected.
And Dr. Emma, I will tell you that you are inspiring other people as well.
How?
Where is it? We were over at one of your clients' houses to help her with some stuff and picking out some goats, and she was like, yeah, I have Dr. Emma come out and do the horns. And she was telling us about how you scoop the horn buds out.
Oh, Michelle.
Yes, Michelle.
Yes. Okay. There are too many full-grown men disbudding goats and doing it poorly. And it's so frustrating because then I have to deal with the scurs that grow back. So I take pride in my disbudding jobs. And Michelle even trusts me to disbud her short horns, which are like World Dairy Expo winners, like over her cattle vet. And I don't know quite what I did to earn that trust, but it is a major pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, she's got some big money mamas there, as I would call them.
Yes.
Well, awesome. What veterinary clinic do you work at, or can you share that?
I work at the Animal Hospital of Woodstock. So like I said, it's a primarily small animal clinic. When I interviewed there, I asked them if I would be allowed to bring farm animals into the building. And I don't think they entirely knew what that entailed. But our kennel staff is certainly working their butts off on days that the goats and the llamas and stuff come into the clinic because they don't understand that they're just going to poop all over the place. But but the other interesting thing that we do is we do a ton of canine reproduction at my clinic. So I'm one of the two doctors that does repro there. So I don't do much advanced stuff yet with the goats, but I do a lot of AI and breeding and shipping and freezing semen on the dog side of things. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh, how fun.
On that note, Laura, what's happening in the bustling metropolis of Dawn, Missouri?
Oh, we're not bustling. Lots of baby goats, beautiful weather. So they've been spending time outside. And, you know, is there anything cuter than watching baby goats jump around outside? I mean, that's just, it just makes your heart light. I don't care what has happened in the day. If you go outside and watch those babies play, it's got to make everything better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And I've got three more does left to kid. So that's always nice. One of them is my doe who turns 9 on the 11th of April. So, you know, kind of on pins and needles for her. She's kind of slowed down a little bit. seems a little tender on her front feet, so I'm watching her pretty close to, you know, just make sure she's doing okay, and it makes it okay to her due date. And if we have to go a little bit early, we could do that too. So, but yeah, other than that, enjoying spring. It's beautiful weather around here in Missouri. This is the time of year that I love Missouri. So anyway, Cameron, you got anything going on? Oh, wait, you do have something going on.
Yeah, by the time we put this up, the online sale will be over and my life will be less crazy, I feel like. Those that say, oh, you just put them up on the internet, let people bid, it doesn't really work like that. It's a lot more work. It's a lot of promotion. It's a lot of education, and it's a lot of phone calls and talking with people as well. So I'm thankful that the phone is at least lighting up or people are at least talking about it. So that's really exciting. And then we've lined up transport throughout the country, which has made it very enticing to a lot of people. I had somebody message me today and say $100 to transport a kid out east. And they were like, and I was like, yep. And they said, that's how much the transport's charging. And they were like, wow, I normally sell a $600 kid and I have to pay $500 for transport. So we're going to eat north, south, east, and west. So, but that'll be dead by the time this podcast is over and we'll be able to, or goes up. So we'll be able to talk about that later. Like Laura, I'm in that same home stretch of kidding as well there. But Dr. Emma, have you seen a lot of mud at your place?
I'm blessed. So we've only been in this house for a little over a year at this point. So the mud hasn't truly set in yet. It got a little soggy with all the rain that we got, but thankfully they haven't had too much time to kind of stamp everything down. So we're actually doing pretty well.
Yes. And I will tell you that we've just had a lot of mud and we cleaned out our pens the other day. And, you know, when you do that, you don't have a nice pack, you have to bed pretty aggressively. So we've been bedding very aggressively. So I have to run and go get straw here this week. So I'm dreading that I'm out of straw already. Because this time last year, I was sitting on, you know, 50-plus bales still. So just always something different here, but it's milk, feed the terrorists, and then repeat pretty much here.
Cameron, are you channeling your inner Dr. Ed with the deep bedding thing?
I talk to him every single – it feels like every single day, especially when my mom is traveling, his wife is traveling or – away, and he needs somebody to talk to. So he calls me pretty frequently, at least 5 times a week. And if he misses a day, he's like, well, we haven't talked to him forever. But I will tell you, I normally talk to him like several hours after he's cleaned his pens. So I am not channeling my inner Eddie as much, but I'm getting close to it as well. So I was just thinking, I probably need to go outside after this podcast and bed down the girls.
I love it.
Yes, yes. Dr. Emma, what's going on at your place?
Well, we had a whopping kidding spree of 4 does in the middle of March, which was a lot for me because I've kind of put my breeding program on hold while I went through vet school. And now that I've got my own space, I'm starting to let it grow a little bit. And I took some advice from you guys. I did my first inductions this year for convenience, and I have to say 9 out of 10. There was one doe that kind of lagged behind, but it made my life a lot easier when I was farm sitting and running around and training kids on buckets and just generally losing my mind. So it was definitely a tool that I will use again in the future. So
yeah, that makes me so happy to hear that. I just tell people I do induction. I don't promote induction because it's not for everybody, but if it can work for your lifestyle, go for it.
Mm-hmm. It's a tool in the toolbox, which seems to be a theme for today.
It does.
The Wisconsin Dairy Goat Association is kind enough to let us Northern Illinoisans crash their party. And we went ahead and signed up as possible donors for their ShareAKid Foundation or ShareAKid program, which is really awesome. So youth in the state can write essays and apply for goat kids to help start their projects or help them grow. And then producers and different breeds across different areas of the state can sign up and say, yes, I'd be interested. No, I won't be. And they messaged me the other day asking if I was still interested because they had somebody that was qualified for an Alpine in the eastern part of the state. And I said, yes. So it was super touching to be able to do that. I mean, God, if I had gotten my start like this, I think it might have given me a little bit more of a leap forward. Not that where I didn't start was not where I started was bad, but I'm super excited. And I mean, you know, there are a lot of people that breed Alpines, but I mean, I've got 4 doe kids this year. So that's 25% of my kid crop that I'm giving back. So I'm excited to see what this kid does for the youth and hopefully can follow her over the next couple of years and see what kind of impact she makes.
That is awesome. Thank you for doing that. And I agree. If I had been able to do something like that, that would have been amazing.
Yeah. Plus the opportunity to work with somebody, become a mentor potentially. You know, Laura, we love talking about our mentors here.
Absolutely.
And you know, being able to work with the youth. And there's nothing more that I love than being able to work with youth. And Dr. Emma's seen that firsthand, whether it was good or bad or the parent was yelling at me. But it really means a lot to hear that, Emma. So, Dr. Emma, so thank you. Sorry, I guess I knew Emma before she was a doctor. So I'm
yeah, you're grandfathered in.
I think on that note, though, I think it's a perfect segue into our topic with Dr. Emma here. And this is an episode I've wanted to do for a while, but I haven't really found the right guest for it yet. And when I was kind of brainstorming, and I was like, I texted Laura and I said, hey, I think I got a guest for the Veterinary Toolbox. And she was like, she's like, who? I said, Dr. Emma Camps. I just hear really great stuff from all of her people that she works with. And I was like, this sounds great. Dr. Emma, let's get you on type thing here. So I'm excited to dive into building your veterinary toolbox on your farm with Dr. Emma Camps. Are you ready, Dr. Emma?
Let's do this.
Ooh.
So we have some good ground rules. You want to kind of go over that, Cameron?
Yes. So I'm going to set the stage here on this. Is what we're going to talk about here is very much in a nutshell. We're going to talk about general farm veterinary situations. We're not necessarily going to get into specific medicines and supplies. We're not going to necessarily get into any type of protocol as it pertains to ART or advanced reproductive technologies. We're also not going to delve into those regional nuisances. We all live in the Midwest, and we got to understand that there are we all have a Midwest bias as it pertains to that. And we're really not going to get into protocols either for kitting or specific medication doses as well. Because Dr. Emma, for that, who should they talk to?
They should talk to their vet, who they should have a valid VCPR with.
Yes. And what is a VCPR for the listeners that might not understand that?
That is a veterinary client patient relationship, aka some point of contact, so we know who you are, what you're doing, and so we can have you on our radar for things like after hours emergencies. So I'm seeing that more and more in folks that do large animal is they're seriously limiting their after hours duties to people that are established with them, because quite frankly, no one wants to be on call. It kind of sucks. And so the people that you're on call for, you want to make sure that they're good clients, that they're going to pay you back, and that they're actually going to heed what you say and work to have that relationship together. I mean, I got stiffed on a $3,000 dog C-section once coming in after hours for somebody that wasn't established because I trusted the person. So people are becoming much, much more conscientious about who is going to get the luxury of being able to have us on call. And it's really changing the face of large animal medicine, you know, because, you know, gone are the days of the large animal vet being on call and having a personal cell phone number to be able to ring them up when you need to. I mean, it's becoming really tough to find somebody that's willing to do that. So make sure that you tell your vet that you're grateful. Make sure that you call them when things are good too, to help establish wellness protocols and have them out and see your operation and see what's going on there. Don't just wait until you need them at 2 o'clock in the morning, because they will be much more willing to come out and help you if you've created that relationship beforehand.
I have often said that a good vet is very much worth their weight in gold. And over and over and over, I am just so thankful for the vets that I've gotten to work with over the years that you know, give me excellent direction. And we have that trust relationship. You know, they know that I'm going to do the right thing by my animals as much as I can. And I also trust them to tell me if something is beyond what they can do. And vets are pretty precious people. So
I will say that I think the biggest thing, a couple of things you could do for your veterinarian, bake them any type of baked goods. I hear they like those.
We do.
you can tell them thank you. But I think the biggest thing that you can do is just pay your bill, wouldn't you say?
Oh, hallelujah. The running joke is that goat people are only second to horse people for not paying their bill.
Oh, gosh, that's a bad reputation to have.
It is.
Yes. So knowing all that and understanding that, and let's talk about tools in the toolbox that you can have on your farm as long as you visit with your veterinarian, about how to use these tools effectively as well there. But I think the first thing before we get into the tools is we got to look at the toolbox. Does that make sense to everybody?
Makes sense to me. I can't tell you how many times I've walked into a milk house and I've seen some bottle of XYZ sitting on the shelf with an inch of dust on it. And, you know, farmer goes and blows it off and sticks a needle in and goes ahead and gives an injection. We can't leave these medications out for safety reasons, for, you know, safety for humans and for the animals that we're injecting. And, you know, if we've got littles running around the barn, you know, some of the things that we work with are pretty potent, so they need to be protected.
And I would imagine the fluctuation in temperatures, light can disintegrate some drugs, all of those things might affect whether that drug's even effective anymore, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Nope, go for it.
So if you walk into a dream farmer's barn, where would they be storing their medicine at?
In a perfect world, some type of climate-controlled area, and I know some folks that don't have a big barn, that might mean bringing injectables in when it's going to be below a certain temperature, but climate-controlled and as clean as we can ask for. So whether that's some type of cabinet that you keep them in that protects them from dust and flies and things, one of my favorite Christmas presents that I got this year was a plastic set of drawers. And I went ahead and I labeled every single drawer with the different classes of medications and things that I had. And all of those items live in the drawer. So I know where I'm looking, what I've got in there. Everything's going to be protected from dust, from animals, from barn cats, from other people. And staying organized can also help, so we don't have anything like accidental medication pokes. So we reach for one thing and it's actually something else. Being organized can save time and can certainly keep things in best medical condition.
So my question here is it better to store your medicines inside the house as compared to the barn, or would it be better if it's more readily available?
If it's anything like my house, what starts in the house rarely stays in the house. So I guess I would pick a location and commit to it. That way, when you're looking for something, you know where it's expected to be. So barn is fine. You know, there are some things that you need fairly quickly. But I think as long as you're consistent with where you keep it so you can stay organized, either would be okay.
Laura, where do you like to keep your medicines at?
So one of my OCD kids named Caroline cleaned out my pantry and made these nice little shelf stacker things. And all of my meds are in the pantry in my house. And again, because I don't have a really good place, out in the barn to keep it. It's not, it would not be climate controlled out there. So, but everybody knows where to grab where it is, and they're all divided up, you know, antibiotics are in one area. Things like Banamine, thiamine, all of our other drugs are in another area, and, syringes and needles are right next to it too. So, and then, which probably isn't ideal, there's one tray in my refrigerator that is nothing but goat meds. It's up on the top. We don't have littles in the house. I don't really worry about anybody getting into it, but probably not the best option there.
Definitely in a clinic environment, we have designated refrigerators for food and for medications and things like that, especially like things like blood products that might have a little bit higher risk of zoonotic disease and things like that. I'm guilty of the same thing though, Laura. My medications are up in the butter drawer in the door of the fridge, up out of the way, so nobody is rifling through it when they're reaching for other things.
Yeah, I hate when I, you know, get my CD&T mixed up with my mustard, you know.
It happens to the best of us.
So I will tell you, having had, you know, several kids get out of college, it seems like that we've at different times had excess little dorm refrigerators around. And so I thought, this is great. I'm going to put one in the garage, and that's where I'll put all of my goat meds. But there's a problem with that when you forget that the garage freezes in the wintertime, and then all of your goat meds freeze in the refrigerator in the wintertime.
Oh, no.
So, that wasn't a smart thing.
When that happens, Dr. Emma, is the best thing to just pitch those, or there's some things that you can like salvage, or I'm just curious. I've never happened to me.
So if they're still intact, because a lot of times freezing will like bust the glass on injectables, you can always check the temperature range that should be listed on the label of the drug for their storage. I would as soon as assume, unless it's something that can be like frozen into aliquots and things like that, it's probably toast.
Yeah, I pitched it all because I just didn't want the worry about it, you know. But I learned the hard way not to do that. So
gotcha there on that. My last thing there is some of the stuff we use for advanced reproductive technologies. Or is there any type of special protocols we need to consider when utilizing those? Or you know, we don't have to get into it, but I think about like freezing PG600 with an air bubble or something like that there.
That's usually what I do with the PG that I have on hand, is freeze it in individual doses in the syringes with a little air bubble, and then make sure that it's double bagged and tucked away as best you can so that nobody's touching those hormones, because those are definitely a class of medication that you have to be really careful about, especially if you've got anybody in the house that is pregnant or is trying to become pregnant, because those things affect us just as much as they affect the animals that we use them on.
Good to know.
Yes, excellent there. I want to kind of dip, now that we've got our literal toolbox and where we're storing things and talking about that, I want to talk about being proactive as a goat producer versus reactive as a goat producer. Oftentimes we're more reactive than we are proactive on things, especially when it comes to difficult situations. So I think about a conversation I had with my wife, whereas we're like, well, we need all the supplies for a C-section, and we waited until the last minute in order to order them. The first goat we kitted out needed a C-section. So, what things can we talk about in terms of, you know, what things can we have on hand as a goat producer, or what things can we do that can be proactive instead of reactive?
Well, I think honestly, listening to this podcast is a great way to be proactive because you can. I would encourage everyone to have out a checklist and jot some stuff down. Maybe see if it's something that's worth looking into for your production practice. Because, gosh, it never happens until it does. And you know, I've had people tell me, "Oh, I don't have to worry about XYZ because it's never happened here before." Well, you're just playing the odds at that point. So I think you can be fairly well stocked and fairly well prepared for probably less upfront cost than you think. But I definitely agree. You know, the time that you need that thiamine is going to be 3 o'clock in the morning and Farm and Fleet ain't open at that time. So it's better to be safe than sorry and have it and not need it than need it and not have it. Especially with the shortage of veterinarians and how similarly a lot of the common disease processes present, a lot of times we're kind of throwing the kitchen sink at them, like especially with things like listeria and polio. They look so similarly, and if you can get some treatment started, you know, often sooner than your vet arrives, then you have a much, much better prognosis as far as recovery goes.
Can I jump down a rabbit hole real quick on something that being reactive versus proactive made me think of? Back when I first had goats, and you know, we're talking like a long time ago, I was always taught that you should keep epinephrine on hand in case you have an anaphylactic shock. And for years I had a little tiny bottle of epinephrine, and of course, you know, it goes bad, so then you have to pitch it and get another, and then eventually I just didn't do that. Is that even talked about anymore? Is that anything that is even considered to be something you should hold on hand? I don't even know if you can get it anymore.
I haven't had anybody ask me for it in recent years.
Okay.
I mean, that's not saying much. I graduated in 2020. So, but I think even on the small animal side, I tend to stay away from epi and I do more steroids and antihistamines. So okay. I think you could potentially double dip in your dexamethasone if that is the steroid that you have on hand.
Okay, good to know.
Now you're talking about my wife's favorite one there. I was telling my dad the other day that I've never seen a woman use so much dexamethasone in her life, but she uses it for a lot.
I know. She might have to turn me because I'm definitely more of an NSAID person. But is it the withdrawal time? Is that why she likes the dex?
She just likes the hormone there, from my understanding, or the steroid, excuse me, of it all, and has a really solid, in her opinion, again, this is her opinion, pain soothing or pain acting there, and it sometimes works faster than Vanamine, especially in kids.
So, I might have to dabble.
Yeah. She was talking to my dad about using it last night, actually, so. Yeah, I would say she uses most of the time. And we even use it for like disbudding too. We'll use it for disbudding too, actually, as well. So if you want to talk to dexamethasone, I think that's my wife's love language.
The roids. Okay, got it.
Yes, the roids. Kind of getting back into it though. So there's always that question of if you're a big herd versus a small herd, and at what point in time is it more advantageous to have a big bottle or a nice 100 ml bottle of Draxxin on, or any type of heavy hitter medicine? I think of Draxxin as a heavy hitter there, as compared to just getting a couple doses from your veterinarian.
Mm-hmm. So I, as owner of said small herd, it's definitely something that I keep in the back of my mind when I'm deciding, you know, what to stock and what not to keep. So, hey, you can't do that.
We're dog friendly. It's fine. We like
my,
them.
My dogs peeked up and were like, what's going on?
Yeah. Penny is like, what is that?
Oh no.
Do you think Dr. Emma, that some of it is probably vet, respective of what your vet's comfortable with? Cause I know like some drugs, my vet's like, yep, you can have a whole, you know, I'll sell you a whole bottle of that. And other drugs, they're like, you know, let's think about how many doses you're probably going to use. And let's parcel it out that way. And again, this is a vet that I've used for 20 years. So it's not like a new relationship there, but it just seems like there are some drugs they're more comfortable with. Otherwise, maybe it's a financial thing too. I don't know.
I agree. So I think if you're blessed enough to have a vet that's willing and able to create drug protocols for you, then that might also help decide, you know, what do we anticipate to use more frequently? You know, do we tend to see more respiratory? Do we have good ventilation? And that's not something that's a problem for us, you know? And I think a lot of it too boils down to trust and communication, because, you know, some of these, most of the drugs that we use in goats are off label because there's not money in the research for the goats like there is in some of our other farm species. So there's some serious concerns about drug residues and things like that. And, you know, you can swear up and down that it's a pet and that they're never going to enter the food chain. But at the end of the day, in the eyes of the FDA, they are a food producing animal. And if there are residues, it can come back on the vet that originally prescribed it. So I think that's why some vets are a little bit more stingy on what they're willing to parcel out versus sending whole bottles. But it comes down to communication and building that protocol, you know, in case of X, then use Y. And if something is beyond the normal protocols that you've discussed with your vet, then that definitely warrants a phone call to get them involved and see what else can be done.
Mm-hmm. So I know some of those heavy hitters in terms of like the higher dose antibiotics, I'll just throw out an example, like an LA 300 or something like that is maybe more cost effective to have a smaller dose at home. Mm-hmm. I guess, what are some of those other things that might be a little easier on the pocketbook, but might just be more like general everyday good things to have on the farm there?
Yeah. So there are definitely, I feel like it's the antibiotics that tend to be a little bit more on the expensive side. I mean, Draxxin, I just looked earlier today, is $140 for the bottle, which
is that the veterinarian's cost? And then you're obviously marking up from there, or?
I just searched on Valley Vet. I'm not quite sure what it would be through our supplier. But yeah, Draxxin, $140, new floor, you're looking at $80. I mean, some of the other things that might rhyme with Schmatril are also not inexpensive.
Schmatril. You know what? I once asked my veterinarian for a bottle of Schmatril when I was in high school, and that bottle of they were like, "What size do you want? The 100 ml or the 250 ml?" This is before a lot of the conversations about VCPR and kind of those conversations we're having. And I said, "Well, it seems like my dad is using a little bit of the Schmatril," and I was like, "Let's just get the 250." And when my parents saw that bill, they freaked. But what are some things that are smaller that you could definitely have at home?
Absolutely. So if it's not on back order, penicillin is a wonderful first line antibiotic to have on hand. So the way that I've got my med kit organized is by different kind of classifications. So most of the things that I mention, if they're supplements or if they're injectable vitamins and you know, pain management medications, they tend to be fairly reasonably priced. I'd say if you've got a herd of five or more and you breed. So the way that I've got my little plastic drawers laid out is the first drawer is the most expensive drawer. It's the drawer that you should reach for first, and that is for diagnostics. So I implore you, goat gab following, cult, whatever you want to be called, if you take anything at all away from this podcast, please, for the love of God, get a thermometer. You have no excuse. Open up your Amazon, put it in the cart, and please just buy it. I mean, there is no reason in 2024 that you should be operating without a thermometer for your animals at this point. I mean, you know, necessity for antibiotics, response to treatment, you know, prognosis, if you haven't gotten a fever down, all of these things can be identified and more readily monitored by having a simple tool that costs less than $10. If I polled 100 veterinarians and they asked if their producers could have one thing in their med kit, I guarantee you 99 would say a thermometer.
Okay, so I've got some questions about this, okay?
Okay.
Digital versus, you know, the glass ones that you have to shake.
Do they even make those anymore?
I bought one not too long ago. It has a hole on the end of it with a string with a little alligator clip that you can clip to the animal's hair so you don't lose it.
How far up are you putting it?
Well, not that far. No, I think it's more that, you know, if the animal twitches and, you know, it gets lost in the straw. I don't mean, oh God, I don't think, I hope not internal loss. That would be painful and awful.
I'm sure it's been done, but it's a scary thought.
Hopefully not in a goat. Good Lord. I hope not. But anyway, does it matter? I mean, does a digital work just as fine?
I like digital because I feel like you've got less time fussing around.
Okay.
I think one thing you have to be careful of, and it's more of a small animal thing, less because of the shape of goat feces, is sometimes when you take a temp and you're in a fecal ball, it can be falsely lower. So what I tend to do is when I put my thermometer in, I angle the tip upwards, kind of towards that descending aorta that's up there, so I can get more of a true temp.
Aha. Okay. That makes sense. And let's see, do I have any other thermometer ones? I guess it's just really important to make sure that if you use the digital one, is there a difference between a veterinary digital one and a human digital one?
There is not.
Okay.
There is not. So I would, however, if you order two of the same kind with the intention to use one for animals and one for people, I would make sure you label them human versus animal, because there may or may not have been an instance in vet school where someone's unsuspecting sister may have used the wrong thermometer and there was a fallout.
Oh, ick. Okay. So you mean like the old joke, how do you tell the difference between a rectal and an oral thermometer? And the answer is the taste. Don't go by that, right? You knew it was coming. You knew it had to come in there, right?
But it's such a simple and overlooked tool. I mean, just the other day I had a little, oh gosh, a 3-day-old lamb, maybe. And he was kind of gimping around a little bit. And the owner was like, oh yeah, I think he pulled something. You know, he's in a pen with little goat kids and he's normally not that active and bouncy, but he must have just pulled something. And did you take a temp? No. 104.3. I think that's more like septic polyarthritis. Maybe we should start some penicillin. So simple, 30 seconds. I mean, even some of the human grade digital thermometers, they're meant to read out in 5 seconds or less. You can get an easy answer to a lot of questions.
And you should do that before you even call your vet.
I think it's a great place to start. I mean, when I have goat producers or friends message me on Facebook, which is not always encouraged, but I take care of the people that take care of me. The first thing I'll ask is, you know, signalment. So that is the age, the gender, and the breed of the patient, just so I can get a general idea. And I ask, have you taken a temperature? Because I want to know what our baseline is. I want to know, you know, does it seem more trauma? Does it seem more infectious? It starts to lay the groundwork for the questions that I need to ask next to kind of figure out what the mystery is going to reveal.
So if I called your emergency hotline and that hotline bling, as Drake would say. And it says, and I call you and I say, hey, I've got a goat. It's a Toggenburg. It's a doe kid. It's born on March 3rd. It's got a temperature of 103 XYZ there. And would you just be really happy about that?
I would be overjoyed.
Okay. Call. Okay. Everybody that's listening, remember that next time you call your veterinarian at 2 a.m. in the morning, unless it's a kidding problem.
Yeah, matters a little less for that.
So what other kind of diagnostic things do we need to have on hand?
I would be so tickled if everybody just got a thermometer, but there are some other things that we can keep around that can prove to be useful. So especially if you're breeding, it's worthwhile to have some ketone strips. So just the regular human ketone strips will work for those heavy bred does that were worried about ketosis, especially in later lactation. They also make fancier glucose and ketone meters that you can use a blood sample for. So I got one this year, thankfully didn't have to use it, but it was reassuring to know that it was in my back pocket and ready. So along with other diagnostics, I would probably lump in my like blood collection supplies. So that's going to be your needles and syringes that you're going to use to deliver many of these medications. But, you know, blood tubes and things like that. I like having plain white top tubes. So those are tubes that have no additives in them, because if I've got a doe that I think might be tipping into mastitis or something like that, you can get a midstream milk sample in one of those white top tubes and stick it in the fridge until you can get it to your vet to send it for a culture. So that's a really nice tool to have on hand too.
Got it. Gotcha.
I want to talk about your needle. I'm curious about what your philosophy is on needles and syringes, specifically needle gauges. Do you have like a rule of thumb for that for a producer? Or because I normally just pick a color and go with it type thing, and my wife yells at me. So
I think anywhere from 22 to 18 is going to be appropriate. So again, just a reminder, the bigger the number, the smaller the gauge. So a 22 is smaller than an 18. So I have some people that are pansies that don't like poking their goats. So then I'd say go a little smaller. I'm a wimp and I do 22 gauges for my kids when they get their CDT. But regular blood draws, other IM injections, I usually go with a 20. My techs call me a wimp because I don't like to poke with 18s on dogs or large animals. But sometimes if you need to get something in fast, or if you're drawing blood and you want that to go smoother, the larger gauge can really help you out.
Or if you're giving new floor.
Oh God. Yeah. Anything that's viscous.
Oh yeah.
Well, the LA 300s of the world. We're not going to get into specifics on those, but it's important to note that it's not always the green colored needle, correct? It might be a different color depending on what you're giving.
That is correct. That is correct. So certain brands will have different colors allocated. So double check the gauge. Otherwise, you're going to have some sad goats or some frustrated producers.
Does it matter if you use a slip lock or a lure lock? Does it matter?
Oh God, I think slip lock needles need to just not exist anymore. I hate lure slip needles.
I do too. Thank you. It's not just me who hates them.
No. I like the lure locks, and if you say, well, I like to give oral meds and I don't like the lure lock on there. Here's your small animal medicine hack. Just take some dog nail trimmers and just go ahead and cut off that lure lock on the outside. And then you have a lure slip.
Good to know how to tamper with veterinary supplies.
And Dr. Emma, that was worth its weight in gold. Thank you.
All right. So we've got our diagnostic tools. Where do you go next in terms of your veterinary toolbox at?
Yeah. So next on my toolbox, I would say would be supplements / probiotics. So these are things that I don't know that I would necessarily label them as medications, because they should be supplemental to the things that you're doing managerial wise anyway. So redundant man of redundancy strikes again. So I would start with a probiotic. It is never going to hurt anything. I give probiotics out like Oprah gives out cars. So it's important to note that they're not all created equal. So I really like the Probios brand, and I love their oral gel. I feel like that's a little bit easier to get into them, because the powders, I feel if you top dress, if they're not eating, they're going to eat around it. Otherwise, then you're trying to suspend it and get it into them. The gel is super easy to dose for kids and for adults. And if they don't take the entire tip of the dosing syringe in their mouth, you can also squirt it on your finger and then just kind of swipe the inside of their mouth to get it in. So anytime you're using antibiotics, you should be using probiotics, because you're going to be disturbing that gut flora. You know, there is some good bacteria in there, and you know, gut health is systemic health. I use it when I've got somebody off feed. I use it anytime anybody's not feeling well. I dose preemptively before something stressful. So like kidding, before a trailer ride, before a show, because you know, the last thing we need is a little bit of stress colitis. And if we can prevent that by being proactive, here is an excellent, excellent place to start.
I will tell the listeners that when I go to a national show, I probably buy the entire farm store out of probiotic. And I use it on the trailer ride. I use it when we stop. I love that. I love that crap for going to goat shows and long haul in there. Anything over 6 hours. So yeah, and probiotics, huge. Whenever you're changing the environment.
Yeah, they are definitely creatures of habit. So anytime that homeostasis is disturbed, then we've got to do something to help maintain it.
God, she has been listening, Cameron.
Yeah, Dr. Emma, you are using my favorite word. And my wife is going to listen to this and she's going to be like, she's been listening too much, Cameron. She's using your word homeostasis.
I don't know. I don't know what's more embarrassing, using homeostasis or the fact that I told your oxytocin joke to my coworker, and it really was a letdown, because it was like the third time I told it to her and she was like, you can st- Oops, sorry.
And listeners, if you haven't heard the oxytocin joke,
perfect.
You're going to have to go back and find it, because it's worth finding.
All right. So we've went through kind of our probiotics there on that. Anything else in that next level toolbox there on that? I see on your list that you have gloves, aka milking condoms. But let's talk about the why, where, how, and why should we be using gloves, and what should we be using them for as producers?
Yeah, so we should probably be using them a lot more than we do. So for routine things like milking, you know, most of the mastitis cases that we see are because of staphs and things that are found on our skin that have been introduced to the mammary gland. You know, anytime we're dealing with anything reproductively, so whether that is kidding, whether that is, you know, we've had a doe abort and we've got some tissues and things to clean up, whether we're treating wounds, you know, it's to protect us just as much as it is to protect the animals. And kind of the buzzword for that is zoonosis. So zoonotic diseases are those that are shared between animals and people. And it's something that we really need to keep in mind. Again, you know, reproductively, that's super important. You know, there are some diseases that can cause real issues. And I hope you've never seen something like that, Laura, in your line of work. But I certainly want to do what I can to arm my clients and everyone that I have the blessing of educating to make sure that that's not something that we ever need to deal with.
You hate to think about that, but yeah, it is a very real thing. And I think about toxoplasmosis is one of the scariest things that I've had to deal with in my line of work. And it's tragic when, you know, you talk to people and you learn, we've got concerns because you're showing these titers in your tests. And you got that from your cat. So very real thing.
Mm-hmm. So I, you know, there are a ton of different styles of gloves to help, you know, if people have sensitivities to latex and things like that. There are a lot of different options. As far as colors, if that's your thing, if that inspires you to wear gloves, then you do you. But make sure you're wearing them at least.
Gotcha.
Do you ever use anything, Dr. Emma, like CMPK gel or anything like that? Calcium gels?
I've had them around, and I've dabbled a little bit. I found the oral formulations, they hate the taste. And yes. And I was like, I don't know if this is worth it in this scenario. So I haven't had a reason to use it since then. I tend to use a lot more like Power Punch if I'm really in a pinch and I need to get some energy in there fast if we're dealing with a negative energy situation. So that tends to be what I reach for instead, but certainly there's a time and place.
So we keep looking at that second layer there on that. I see you probably have wound care in there. Now, is this a lot of stuff that you can get over the counter, or do you suggest special stuff from your veterinarian?
So I believe most of the things that we'll discuss with wound care are over the counter. So In addition to picking up your thermometers and raising them to the sky in a united front to practice better medicine, you're going to take the other hand and grab that rusty old can of Blue Coat and throw it in the trash. Because
love Blue Coat.
There is no benefit other than tagging the dough that got tagged by something else. And there are much better alternatives. So my all-time favorite topical medication to use in almost any situation would be good old SSD. So silver sulfidiazine. And anybody that's got horses should be familiar with this product, but it's a cream and it is applied topically for burns, for wounds, scratches, scrapes. I would bathe in it if I could. And I tell my dog and cat clients the same thing. It's a wonderful topical to have on hand. So
I'm still kind of reeling here over no Blue Coat, because that's kind of like my grandma's Mercurochrome, you know?
You know, everything my father has taught me is a lie now.
I don't want to cause familial rifts. But I'm also pretty sure that the dye is actually not legal for use in food safe animals or for food producing animals.
Good to know.
That's why every one of mine that goes to the sale barn is bought by a nice Amish family and it's out in their back pasture, is what I tell myself.
Oh, good. So the SSD is a better option there if you're looking for something that's more, you know, sealing in wounds, then there is silver bandage spray. And I got this from Doc Demler up in Wisconsin, but it's a really nice aerosolized silver bandage. So it's got the same antibacterial properties and it does a really good job of kind of sealing up that wound site. So like I'll do this on my disbudding sites for kids. Is after I've gone ahead and I've scooped out that whole horn bud, then I'll just go ahead and spray them with the silver spray. I found if it's a little dirty to begin with, sometimes it can trap some bacteria under there, but knock on wood, so far this year I haven't had any complications with using it.
Interesting. Okay. I wonder if that's the same thing. Is that the same thing as AlloShield?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's what we use all the time. Shield, and we use that for wounds as well as the sputting as well. There makes them look all sparkly, I guess.
What about things like the Telfa pads or Coban? That's not vet wrap. Yeah, that your local tractor supply store has in all kinds of colors, including neons and camo and
dang right.
Cheetah print. they're nice to have. I wouldn't say they're absolutely necessary. You know, if we're budgeting and we're deciding what to have and what not to, I'd pick the B complex over the fancy vet wrap, because you also need to be a little bit cautious when you are actually bandaging, because there is such a thing as bandaging too tight, and I've seen some complications from that on the small animal side. So it's nice to be able to keep things clean, but it wouldn't be on the tippy top of my list.
Okay.
Gotcha. What else do we got in that level two there of the toolbox?
Yep. So kind of bouncing back to the supplements to go along with like propylene glycol and power punch and things like that. Mm-hmm. Would be your things like B complex or thiamine. So polio is one of the bigger things that we see that kind of presents acutely, so quickly, and can be disastrous if we don't catch it. So we need to be able to supplement that B1 vitamin to them fairly quickly. So there is a difference. So B complex has a lot of different B vitamins in it. So things like cobalamin, B12, thiamine is what we care about, and I think that's B1. Or you can buy individual like thiamine as a standalone. I tend to see that less in farm stores versus the complex, but you know what? If it's the middle of the night, it's going to do something for you. So other things, you know, parasites are always something that we need to worry about. So, you know, having something like red cell, having some iron injection or injectable is good to have on hand. So when you're going through and you're doing your FAMACHA scores and you're checking, you know, is everybody nice and pink? Is anybody falling behind? You can be able to use these tools to hopefully help booster their red blood cell production while you take appropriate measures as far as deworming protocol goes. So I do think dewormers need to be in the toolbox. I think they are used and abused because they're one of the things that are still over the counter. But they certainly have their place, because I've lost goats to parasites before, and it's not a way that you want them to go. So if you can be proactive and you can do some things in the meantime while you're, you know, working on larger problems and figuring out what other safeguards we can put in place, it's a nice thing to have on hand. So BOCE, I feel, is one of those environmental, you know, very location dependent if you're in a selenium deficient area. So selenium is an amino acid that can help with muscle function. So white muscle disease is something that we can see in kids. So definitely something that's worth testing feedstuffs for and having on hand just in case you need it.
So if you don't know if you're in a selenium deficient area, your vet would be able to tell you that. That would be something that they would probably advise you to have on hand.
Yep. Your vet should know. And if they don't, then there are some other resources online. I don't know them offhand, but most areas and like university extension offices and things like that post maps, and they can let you know, you know, this is what our soil in this area is looking like. So you can help get an idea of, oh, hey, that's me. Maybe this is something that I need to have in my toolbox.
Good to know. Okay.
Gotcha. What else is in that level two before we drop into level three here?
So if you've got any male animals on the property, ammonium chloride is going to be your best friend. So in hitting all of the big topics, you know, parasites, etc., urinary calculi, I'd say as mostly a small animal vet that sees occasional goats, this is the phone call I get. You know, I have a male goat. They're off feed. They just don't seem right. So I always ask, when is the last time you saw them urinate? And not everybody has a good answer for me, but because of the anatomy of their lower urinary tract, male goats are susceptible to urinary obstruction, which can be life-threatening fast. So, you know, depending on your forage, depending on, you know, any extras as far as grains and things like that, that they're getting, different stone types can form. But the theory is this ammonium chloride, when it's fed as a top dress on feed, it changes the pH, so the acidity of their urine, so that these certain stone types can't form. So it's been shown that they can have some resistance. So it's recommended now to pulse dose. So I sent a goat to UW-Madison for surgery, and their instructions going home were to dose them for the first week of the month, and then that's it. So that way they don't become sensitized, and it's still doing that acidification that we expect it to.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yep. And that one, I bought my bag on Amazon. So that one is not prescription for sure. And then, yes.
So we're going to go to Amazon, we're going to get a thermometer, and we're going to get an ammonium chloride bag.
Yes, sir. And some baking soda. Just throw that in there. You know, if we're dealing with things like frothy bloat, if we're dealing with floppy kid disease, so metabolic acidosis, the baking soda can be a really cheap thing to try, because, you know, there aren't a lot of vets that see goats, and a lot of times, you know, it's part of throwing the kitchen sink. You'd throw something until it sticks. And man, that's a nice cheap thing to have on hand just in case you need to toss something.
So baking soda, like what I use in my chocolate chip cookies. I mean, stuff that I have in the kitchen.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That's easy. I like awesome. Easy. Okay.
Awesome there. All right. Can we dive into level three here?
Yes. So level three are medications that you need to get through your veterinarian or approved by your veterinarian. So this breaks down into two big categories. So I'll say that the first category is antibiotics, and the second category would be pain management. So antibiotics, we've kind of touched on this. So there are certain, you know, times and places to be able to use these antibiotics, and a lot of it depends on what the bug is, what we're treating, what the route is, and how long we figure we need to go ahead and treat for. So very wide range of cost when it comes to these drugs. I mean, you can get penicillin and things like LA-200 over the counter still. So those are good first line, less expensive things to have on hand versus, you know, the big guns, like we mentioned before, the Draxxin, the Nuflor, you know, those drugs that are more expensive per mil that are maybe more situationally used. So I'd say I tend to use more penicillin and LA-200 than anything else, because people have it on hand, and it casts a pretty wide net as far as coverage of which bugs and bacteria are being treated.
Gotcha. What about pain management there?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's worth having on hand, because as stoic as our farm animals are, they do still appreciate some degrees of discomfort. So there are a couple different options that we have depending on your flavor and comfort level of administration. So I'd say probably my most widely used medication would be an anti-inflammatory called meloxicam. So it comes in a liquid form, which is really nice for kids, for like disbudding. It comes in a tablet, and it's one of the things that we can rely on a little bit more regularly as far as absorption, because something that we need to remember is that the rumen is very different than the glandular stomach that humans and dogs and cats have. So a lot of the same oral medications that we use aren't digested the same way and absorbed the same way. And a lot of times the rumen does a very good job of destroying them before they can actually do us any good. So meloxicam is my go-to for more chronic inflammatory conditions, I'd say. I've got a lot of older goats and sheep that are on meloxicam daily to help with that pain and inflammation. The other big category I'd say would be flunixin, so generic for Banamine. And the nice thing about Banamine is there's a couple different options as far as route of administration. So on label for horses, Banamine says that it can be given IM, so intramuscularly. However, there is risk for a complication called clostridial myositis when it's given that route. So in theory, if you're creating this anaerobic environment in the muscle, these Clostridium bacteria can overgrow. And there are some pretty gruesome pictures of some reactions that have been recorded in horses. So you can use that route. I much prefer to go IV. And I know that can be a big ask for some people. You know, holding off finding a vein, you know, to draw blood can be scary, but to give a medication can be pretty daunting too. So I counter with Banamine has a Poron that is a transdermal medication approved in cattle. And again, more extra label drug use, but the transdermal can be a really nice go-between, especially when it comes to dosing, you know, those itty bitty kids for disbudding, or I've had a run of broken legs, and that's something that I'll use in owners that can't reliably get the oral or injectable medications in.
Gotcha. But if you're going to go off label about this, you would need to talk to your veterinarian, correct? I just want to air that out.
You ought to. You certainly ought to. So there's an organization called FARAD that helps to establish withdrawal times. So any medication that we give to food-producing animals has a withdrawal. So how long does this animal need to wait after getting this medication before its milk enters the food chain or itself enters the food chain? So this can be very different depending on the drug. You know, some it's as soon as 24 to 48 hours, everything is cleared and good to go. Some medications can take weeks to months to clear before those residues are no longer present. So, you know, in having that conversation with your vet about, you know, what should I have on hand, another part of that conversation needs to be, you know, I know you said Nellie is your favorite goat and she's never going anywhere near a slaughter plant, but it's got to be a possibility. And that's something that you can discuss in your protocols. And as producers, it can help you make wiser decisions about, you know, I'm iffy about this doe is going to stay or go, you know, she might be getting on the truck next week. Maybe I'm going to choose, you know, my dexamethasone over an anti-inflammatory because it clears the system a little sooner. And then we don't have to worry about residues.
Gotcha. Now that is, yes. That. I often call meloxicam Smarties. Would you agree with that?
I like Smarties, although I feel like real Smarties would go down a little easier. So I've had luck. You know, Fig Newtons make really great goat pill pockets.
Oh, I bet they love them.
Oh, yeah, I would eat one. You're giving me I would do some stuff for a Fig Newton.
Dr. Emma, do you have any recommendations? I often think about, like, when I'm on the road going to show, especially a long trip, like a long road trip, I usually try to take a little go bag of meds. I try not to take refrigerated stuff if I can help it, because, you know, there's that's always an issue.
Yeah.
But things for like GI issues. Do you have any recommendations on that, things that you might think about over the counter or not?
Mm-hmm. So definitely that's a space where a probiotic would shine, you know, easy, okay, shelf stable, can fit in your box. Things like kaopectate can help too, if you're worried about stress colitis and a little bit of diarrhea. You know, again, this is a place where you could potentially be proactive and discuss if respiratory vaccinations are things that you should employ for your herd, especially if you're planning on being more social. But I would probably, if you're going to be a little bit further away from a farm store or another resource that could potentially, you know, barter or lend you some medications, I would probably cover each of those categories. So I would probably pick an antibiotic just in case, you know, something pops up like respiratory. I would probably pick a pain management option. So, I mean, you never know when a goat is going to get stuck in something or tweak something. They seem to have a propensity for doing things like that. And
yeah.
And probiotics and baking soda are a pretty good place to start, especially if we're worried about some type of bloat or GI upset.
Great. Perfect. Awesome. Now that. So we've got our three level, we've built our toolbox as well here, but I think there's one thing that's missing, Dr. Emma.
There is, and that is your family-friendly veterinarian.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And you're going to go bake them cookies, right?
I would love some cookies. And I thankfully, I'm very well taken care of by some pretty amazing clients who are not shy about letting me know that I'm appreciated in this space. I mean, it goes a little bit further than just the relationship we create. You know, mental health is something that can't be ignored in the space of veterinary medicine, especially with suicide rates being what they are in the profession. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, the biggest bouquet or, you know, chocolate dipped strawberries. I mean, my favorite thank yous are the notes that I've gotten, handwritten notes and thank you cards. I've got them all up on my desk. And it's something that I can look to and I can reflect on the days that are a little bit harder, because ultimately, you know, everybody's goal is the same. You know, we want our animals to live forever, and whether that's forever in a pet home or forever in a working and dairy environment, you know, we want them to be productive and we want you guys to thrive, because it's a relationship. That's why it's called a VCPR. You know, we're all on the same team, and producers and owners are, I mean, they're the quarterback. We're just here fielding and helping to guide you, but it's up to you to make the play to involve us. It's up to you to make the play to use the antibiotics, to use them correctly when you need to. And it's up to you to be the first voice for your animal's welfare when you're monitoring things at home and you see something that's not right. So ultimately, if we all come together and we work as a team, we can accomplish so much. So involving your veterinarian in the conversation is a great place to start. Another educational point would be, if anybody is on the Facebook, Goat Vet Corner is a wonderful page. And the nice thing about all of the Vet Corner pages is that they have a very diligent team of moderators, and only veterinarians are allowed to comment and offer advice. So you don't have to worry about Joe Schmo down the road and what he does with, you know, used motor oil, but the information that you're getting is actually vetted, no pun intended.
Used motor oil, I love that.
Well, I would like Dr. Emma, as well as Miss Laura, to be part of my team to answer some question and answers to wrap up the episode. And I picked out a question just for you, Dr. Emma, as well. Are we ready?
I was ready as we can be.
Okay. So, our anonymous person, we won't start with the one for Dr. Emma, but our anonymous person with the made up name called Terry Culling asks, is there a proper way to tattoo a goat? Or which method that you have you found is most effective in tattooing a goat?
Is this for anybody?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I highly would not recommend those tattoo pens that people use for rabbits, because I definitely got my first tattoo that way when the goat kid moved. But I like the good old-fashioned green ink. And while I'm still young, I'm going to continue to sit on them. And once I'm older and my knees can't do that, then I guess I'm going to have to figure out something else.
I would agree with that. I think that the pen sounds like a great idea. But after checking goats' ears who have been tattooed with those pens at vet checks, there are some funky extraneous marks that come from those that can get you kicked off of a vet check. So I'm not a big fan. Maybe there's a way to do it where it's, you know, really works, but I haven't seen it work well.
Mm-hmm. Call your vet and knock them out. if you really want to do it with a pen, otherwise copious amounts of ink. I've seen a lot of people, they clamp the tattoo gun and let it go right away. I would leave it in. That way you're letting those punctures stay open a little bit longer, so that afterwards when you remove the tattoo gun and rub the ink back in, it's got a better chance of sticking.
So are you to a clamp and then tattoo, or are you a ink down, then clamp, then rub?
I'm an ink down.
Okay.
I've done it both ways. But the rub, to me, the rub, whether you ink it first and then you tattoo through it, or you tattoo and then you rub the ink in, you gotta rub it in the holes. And I'm sorry, maybe this sounds mean, but toothbrush is the way to go.
Your mm-hmm. worst behaving child's toothbrush that day, right?
Yeah. And then they go to school with green teeth. No, really. No.
Oh, poor Steven. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, poor Steven. Now you know why Steven doesn't like goats. Dr. Emma, do you recommend putting, I've heard people who will put baking soda over it afterwards, like, you know, on the ears after they put the tattoo ink in there. Do you recommend using anything like that?
I have not used anything like that.
I haven't either. So
maybe somebody can chime in and share Cameron? Experience.
Nope. You're talking about the guy who thought it was Christmas when he was like growing up. There's blood and ink everywhere, and green, red, looked like it threw up. It was like always the Saturday before Easter we did it, because I would come home from college, and then my dad. This year he hired a little Freddy 4-H'er to come over and help him read. God bless Reed for helping my dad do all this, his tattoos. I do think it is a two-person job, though.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay, so our next question is Ashley asks, what do you use for teat dip and where do you buy it from?
Mm-hmm. I just use the Fight Back. So that antiseptic is chlorhexidine. So I find it's easy to apply, easy to stock. I mean, full disclosure, we're not coming from a dairy situation. So my facilities are fairly small, and knock on wood, I can usually manage manuring and cleaning out space pretty well. So I tend to use the Fight Back over a more traditional type of dip.
And Laura, what about you?
My answer almost echoes that directly. I've used other teat dips over the years. I've used some that are like latex based a long time ago that you had to peel off. I don't even know if they make those anymore. I've used iodine based ones. You know, the purist in me thinks that I would like to use, you know, either the foaming teat dips or the cups. The realist in me, who realizes that I'm not always the one that milks, and sometimes it's about what's easy and not difficult, fight back works great. That's what we use. I know there are some people who are fight back haters, but it hasn't, I don't have anything negative to say about it.
I mean, those people probably hate Taylor Swift too. So are they really worth the time?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Cameron, what do you guys use?
I echo the sentiment there as well on Fightback because it is easy. And you can get it at your local farm store. And it is tax exempt if you've been set up at your local farm store for tax exempt as well. And you live in the great state of Wisconsin and you have that ability.
I also think, too, Fightback, if it's a question of Fightback or not using teat dip at all, mm-hmm. I'm always going to go with Fightback. I mean, again, there may be clinical trials that show other teat dips are better. I don't know. Maybe not. But if it doesn't get used, it's not going to work. So that's why I use it, because it works around here.
Preach.
Correct. All right. Our last question here is from Addison. Addison asks, do you guys have any advice for youth on how to get your name out there? I want to talk about Dr. Emma here.
Oh boy.
Cause I didn't even know my dad sold her first goats until today. Even, I'll be honest with you, but what Dr. Emma did while she was in college is she showed up to goat shows and was just helping people. And that's how I got to really know Dr. Emma.
Get involved in the community is the best answer. You know, I hate to say it, but it's all about who you know, whether that's getting letters of recommendation for school, whether that's getting a first job, whether that's getting started with, you know, some type of XYZ animal, you know, getting involved, making your presence known, asking questions, and being brave enough to introduce yourself to people is how you're going to be known. So I don't know if it's a successful story, but at the last nationals that was in Ohio, I drove out there solo from U of I to go and watch the Alpines show. And I was like, okay, I have to go and introduce myself to Lori Acton because she's a vet and I want to be a vet. And, you know, I maybe want to shadow her. So I, you know, super, super timidly and mousy almost, you know, walked up to Lori Acton and said hi. And it was probably the most star-studded and brief conversation that I've ever had in my life. I asked if she was still practicing. She said no. And I said, fantastic. And I walked away.
But you did it.
But I did it. And, you know, however many years down the line, you know, there was a fantastic opportunity for one of the does that she was placing. And my name was one that she knew because I had made face-to-face contact, had introduced myself somewhat meekly. But, I mean, we're Facebook friends now. And, you know, it's all about connection. You know, if you want to get a foot in, if you want to be a better showman, you got to show. If you want to be a better breeder, you got to breed. You got to know who your competition is. And even less than that, who are the people that are going to be these stepping stones to help you get where you are? And if there's anything that us goat people love, it's sitting around and talking about goats. So you don't have to worry about a lack of conversation, especially if that's the topic.
I think just being a warm body at the goat show and always around and willing to jump in, that really helps. Like, I think about it. There's a kid. He's actually my chore help. Wyatt is his name. God bless his soul. Mm-hmm. But Wyatt might be one of the most quiet people I've ever interacted with. I didn't even know he could you know, form a paragraph to talk in a conversation, but he's smarter than crap. What I'm saying is Wyatt was always kind of around and always willing to jump in and help there on that. And then he's a really good showman. Now, he looks really awkward because he's about like 6'3 with a Nigerian. But he was able to get his name out there because he was always around. He was always willing to help. And he was a really good showman. So if you're those three things, you are going to get your name out there so much faster than that. I think about a lot of the disciples of the late Barb Nylons. You know, Barb was always pulling those people in, and it's you know, it had a lot of impact on those kids. And mm-hmm. So I think about just being around by that in that group there, that's going to get your name out.
I also think too, you know, having the desire to, for whatever it is, you know, if you're, I'm thinking that this youth is most interested in getting their name out in the show arena, in the show business, mm-hmm. letting people know that that's your desire. You know, I want to become a better showman, being teachable, mm-hmm. you know, going up to the person that you see that you really admire them as a showman. Maybe they're a youth, an older youth. Maybe they're used to be a youth and now they're just a really great showman. Tell them, I want to learn from you. Would you teach me? Because, you know, most people are looking for someone to pass their craft on to. And going at it, knowing that you don't know everything, but wanting to learn everything, I think that's huge. And you know, just like Dr. Emma said, it is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to put you out there. But gosh, who wouldn't want to help somebody like that?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I always joke that we're always looking for the next Kate Hinkle Memorial Internship winner, as I call it there, aka our Help for Nationals.
Kate Hinkle. Well, gosh, I mean, Cameron, that's a great way to learn. I mean, if you know somebody's going to a show, whether it's a national show or a state fair, or it's a show a ways away that you don't ever get to show at, offer to be an intern for them, or offer just, hey, do you need help? I really would like to go. I want to learn. Because I know that for myself, that's how I learned, going with people who had been doing it for a while. And I, you know, learned how they manage their herd on the road. I learned how to do things like that. That's invaluable.
Jump in the truck. I've got two types of lunch meat sandwiches, not just one, two types of lunch meat sandwiches. We're going to the goat show.
Craig.
Well, Dr. Emma, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot that I was afraid to ask my wife. So I'm thankful for that. And I appreciate your time and for staying up late with us on here on a Tuesday.
Well, I appreciate the invitation. You know, you guys know a lot of people, and you know, inside goats and out, and to be asked, it really is an honor. And I hope somebody can take something away from this, because if that's the case, then we did something right.
I think we need to invite our listeners to take a selfie of themselves showing their brand new shiny thermometers.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
That they order and put it on our Facebook's page.
Yes, I agree. And if they do, we could give them a prize, maybe a golden thermometer.
I will fund that. I will fund that effort.
I love it. Love it.
Dr. Emma, where can the people find more information about where you practice veterinary medicine and where they can find more information about your herd of alpines as well? And some recorded grades, right?
I think that was only once.
Okay.
they used to be housed with grades, but thankfully since we bought the house, everybody's separate now. So nothing has been done on purpose as far as that goes. But I practice again at the Animal Hospital of Woodstock. I'm currently the only vet there that does more large animal things, but if you are in the Northern Illinois area, you are always welcome to reach out, and I'll see what I can do to help you guys. I have a personal Facebook, but my herd page is EK Rose Farm. And I mean, I'm freshening 5 does, so it's not like it's a major operation, but it's been a labor of love that through the help of very dedicated friends, shout out Katie, thank you, has been able to stay alive and thrive while I was finishing school. And if you don't know my name now, my hope is that you'll know it in the future, because I intend to stick around and do some pretty big stuff.
Awesome.
Laura, where can the listeners find information about the Goat Gab?
We do have a Facebook page under Goat Gab. It's not as active as I'd like it to be, but we sure do appreciate it when people send us questions.
Yes, we need more questions.
Yeah,
not from anyone named Jason Benson.
Yes, and none that require me to sing. Thank you. Yeah. We also really appreciate feedback on what you like, what you would like to see more of. If there's things that you don't like, please let us know that. Feedback through Apple Podcasts or other places where you get your listening pleasure of Goat Gab. You can get that. You can use that as a way to let us know. And we just appreciate you and look forward to more episodes.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
We'll see you next time.